The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 995. It's the 15th of February, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST, and Colin gives an update on their gas production and discusses other progress at the company. Plus, I also have Colm Clunan at Short Notice, Finance Director at Talao Energy, and kind of explains the 100 megawatt requests for tender debrief meeting that's just happened. Also on the podcast, Louis Coetzee, CEO of Kibo Mining, K-I-B-O, and Louis explains the significance of the Memorandum of Understanding they've signed the Tanzania Electric Supply Company for the power purchase agreement of the company's flagship 300 megawatt Mbeya coal to power project. Also on the podcast, Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments, ENGI, talks about their recent investment in a secured property loan and discusses other developments. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources. That's AST. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be back.
It's always good to get the CEO of the most popular and most followed company on Vox Markets platform on the podcast, because it guarantees me an audience. Let's be honest, you've got a lot of followers. I've had a lot of people every day pretty much will say, can you get Colin on the podcast? Even if he'd been on, they say, can you get Colin on the podcast? So, Colin, for people not aware of you, explain, because I've got a friend now who just started investing. He's texting me loads of questions. But explain, for example, what you do at Ascent Resources, please.
Okay, Ascent Resources, we're an AIM-listed European-focused oil and gas exploration and production company. Mm-hmm. Our main asset is the Petisovci field, which is in northeastern Slovenia on the border with Croatia and Hungary. We've been in the country for about 10 years, and in November of last year, we started export production from our first two wells, PG-10 and PG-11A. So from November, we've been profitable. And from January, we've been started to generate cash when the first invoice was paid. So it's great to be up and running and sort of exit phase one of our development plan to get the field into production and to begin to look forward to phase two.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, and you've recently announced as well, like I said, there's always lots of shareholders want to chat to you and ask you questions. That's why it's good you come on the podcast. But you've set aside an evening to do that. When is that happening, Colin, and how do people get involved in that?
7th of March, and there was an RNS yesterday with the contact details of your shareholder and you're interested in coming along, listening to a bit of a presentation about what we've achieved over the last few months and what we're going to achieve over the next 12 months, and ask any questions you might have. I get a lot of emails and tweets and messages. It's impossible to respond to everyone, so if you want to come along and ask questions face to face, I'd be very happy to see as many people as possible.
Yeah, excellent. So, okay, let's talk about the current production then. So, I know you announced a couple of weeks back you had an invoice for the gas and condensate sold during November, and it was settled. And what was that? It amounted to €303,000. So, have you had any more how has it been going so far since then?
Well, yeah, I mean, that announcement gave shareholders and everyone else some numbers for the first 3 months of production. So we started off in November, we started fairly slowly, and then we increased in December and increased again in January. So January's rate of production was about 23% higher than November's. We also, in the RNS, we talked about November revenue being about 300,000, and that's growing over December and January as well. And we were paid for the November invoice at the beginning of January, and we were paid for the December invoice at the beginning of February. So we're starting to generate a bit of cash. We've taken over €1 million of revenue now from the field, and we've obviously got cash in the bank, as the RNS also stated.
Marvellous. So the current production is gradually rising. How much more can you get out of these fields without doing something else? And what are you going to do to sort of improve or increase production there?
Well, that's kind of what we're focused on at the minute, is sort of optimizing the flow rates from PG10 and PG11A, and then getting the applications in place and the permissions in place to re-enter existing wells. So we've got applications prepared for PG7 and PG9, which will be the next two we go into. And we've also got applications in the system to re-enter and recomplete PG10 and PG11A. So we have those ready when the time comes, because the Petisovji field, it's a layered gas field. So we're producing at the minute from some of the deeper zones. And what we'll do with 10 and 11 is, as we deplete those zones, we'll recomplete up. So we're really down at the tightest sands at the minute. And each well will have a life, maybe three or four different lives as we recomplete up. So we're getting all those permissions in place. And then we're also looking at some of the other wells where it's. But we did a review of the seismic data that we've taken in the field as part of our sort of refining our field development plan, and it's identified two of the wells, PG6 and PG9, where it may be possible to do a sort of pre-stimulation test where we could perforate those wells and see how they flow without stimulation. So that's something we're exploring at the minute as well. And we're also exploring some of the potential from the shallow oil reservoirs, which was another thing that was picked up in the seismic. These shallow oil reservoirs, there's been about 6 million barrels of oil produced from them over the last number of years. They don't produce very much at the minute, but there is definitely oil in place there. And the question's always been, can you produce that remaining oil economically? And that's another thing that we're looking at. So there's plenty going on.
Yeah, so as far as timeline is concerned, you know, you said about re-entering 10 and 11 there. How long does that take, and what is the potential from those? Do you know it at all?
Well, how long it takes, it's really, hopefully we'll get that paperwork through in our hands fairly soon. And having that in your hand gives you a lot of comfort then that you can push those wells harder at the minute, because you know that whenever the time comes to re-enter them, you've got that the permission to do that. And I mean, the potential from 10 and 11 at the minute are attached to about 10% of the sands that PG10 and 11 are completed on. Equate to sort of less than 10% of the total reserves and resources in the field. So the vast majority of the gas is further up. So once you recomplete these wells on the higher sands, particularly the E sand, which is the biggest sand and the best quality, then the production rates will increase and the revenues obviously increase.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's move to the awkwardly named IPPC permit. just summarise what it is for people new listening and where you are with it, Colin, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, this IPPC permit, it was hugely important to the company a couple of years ago before we had this route to Croatia for the gas. So it's no longer needed for gas production in the short term because we've opened up the route to ENA, and the route to ENA is capable of taking three or four times the gas that we're sending down it at the moment. So we've got a lot of room to grow within the existing infrastructure without need for any more capex on facilities. But this IPPC permit is required to build a processing plant in Slovenia, and that would be necessary in the fullness of time to increase production further and to get a better rate for the gas, because we can sell into the Slovenian grid clean gas, and you get a higher margin than what we're getting at the minute to Croatia. So the IPPC permit is important for sort of further down into phase two. The permitting process has taken an inordinate amount of time due to various court cases that went against us. And I'm actually in Ljubljana this morning. We've got a meeting with one of the Prime Minister's advisors later on today to explain to him really the problems that we faced and that all companies in Slovenia face because of the inefficiencies within the Environment Agency, which I think is due to a lack of staffing more than anything else. So we're going to outline that and also just underscore the potential of Petisovji to Slovenia. I mean, in terms of sort of energy independence, which is very important to anyone, we've got sort of 7 years worth of gas in the ground. So we could produce a significant proportion of the country's gas requirement for the foreseeable future. Yeah. And to explain to him how much tax revenue you can get from the project. I mean, the tax revenue in my model, over the next 10 years, we'd be paying about 100 million euros in tax and concession fees. So a lot of income for the country from the project, and jobs in the region as well. Obviously, we're creating jobs and in a much needed area. So we're meeting with the Prime Minister's office to try and go through all that and explain to him the frustrations with the permitting process. This IPPC permit specifically, there was a court case back in November which ruled in our favour that the Environment Agency had done the right thing and were free to award the permit. We're expecting them to write back to us. It's long overdue. They're likely to request an additional study on the soil in the area where we want to put the new plant. We're doing that study, or we nearly completed that study, so whenever they write back to us with this request, we'll send that back to the Environment Agency and then the permit should be awarded. So it's frustrating that it's taken so long, and it is something that I get asked a lot of questions about by shareholders, but it's very important to get that permit just to prove that we can get through the process and that we have it for phase two when we want to really increase above sort of 10 million cubic feet a day. The plant really becomes necessary, but it's not immediately relevant for the next year's production plan.
Yeah, but when you tell them that figure of 100 million euros and jobs, surely you can't turn that down and realise it's a good thing for the country, isn't it,
Yeah, I mean, it clearly makes sense. It's not unique to Ascent, these issues with the permitting process. It's something all companies face here in Slovenia. I think it's a staffing issue, and it would be nice if they would address it.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. All right, Colt, well, listen, if someone's listening right now, you know the routine, and not following the story as yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, Justin. Three reasons. I mean, we are we've got significant proved reserves in a stable EU country, equivalent to many times their national requirement, and the NPV10 of those reserves is worth a significant multiple of our current market cap. We've already brought field into production. We've got over that hurdle. We're producing profitably from the first two wells, and we're generating cash. And the third reason is, over the next 12 months, we do have a development plan which should see us increasing production, and there hopefully will be good news flow as we bring that forward, get permits to re-enter new wells, and execute on our development plan.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you, and have a nice meeting today. I guess you're getting your suit on, are you?
I am. Better get the tie on now, Justin.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have a nice meeting, and hopefully speak again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Cheers. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Clunan, Financial Director at Talou Energy. That's TLOU. You're right, Colin.
Good day, Justin. How are you?
Good, good. Well, listen, you've released a second RNS that I've had to read over about three or four or five times, trying to get some subtleties and understand what's really going on here. So as a background, take us through, first of all, you've submitted a document for tender for... Whatever, you take us through it, and then it was cancelled. Now you have to resubmit because of a meeting with the government. Take us through that. Make it clearer than I'm making it now, Colin, if you could.
Yeah, so for just a background on the company, our CBM project in Botswana, we were issued a tender proposal in early 2017 for a project up to 100 megawatts worth of power, for that power to be supplied to Botswana Power Corporation, the power utility in Botswana. Now, we submitted our response in September 2017. We got a reply earlier this week saying that the tender process was cancelled, and we had a meeting with the ministry in charge of the tender yesterday morning, Botswana time, and following that meeting, they have... We've had a further discussion on the ins and outs and exactly why the tender was cancelled. Mm-hmm. So we met with the ministry, went through the issues they had with our tender, and they had similar issues with the other bidder as well. Both bids were cancelled. They took a very strict view of all compliance requirements, and as a result, they determined that neither bid was compliant. The key items where they failed the bids was in relation to meeting specific operating standards. These are in fact, standards that cannot be met unless the bidders are actually operating. And we had actually pointed that out in our submission. But to be fair to the ministry, they have their guidelines. They have their rules that they must adhere to. So effectively, with the bid not complying with those standards, they threw both bids out. Now we pointed out to the ministry that unless there's an amendment to the actual bid document, it's not possible for either bidder to submit a compliant tender. So effectively, what I'm saying is, some of the operating standards to operate a coal bed methane plant that they requested in their tender that we supply, we explained that without an actual operating coal bed methane plant, we can't supply such a specific standard. So it's really a chicken and an egg, if you will.
Yes, yeah, so it sounds to me like the document they've submitted to you is for a company that's up and running, but yet there's no coal bed methane in Botswana. So like you said, it's impossible to do that. So was this a document sort of, or the parameters of this document based on some other kind of like coal station, power station or diesel station or something like that that's already operating or what?
The tender document would be very similar to one that would have been issued for a coal-fired tender, coal-fired power tender. Yeah. So some of the requirements in that tender wouldn't necessarily sort of switch over so readily to a coal bed methane tender. But in short, we have a great relationship with the ministry, and they were very accepting of what we explained in relation to not being able to meet these standards at this point in time. So we'll now submit an official response in writing to the ministry and take it from there. As yet, we're not aware of the timing around when they will get back to us with an amendment, but the government are very keen on CBM, so we're very confident that an agreement will be reached in time. But going forward, we'll be pushing ahead with our other potential off-takers in any case, and you know they may come to the fore in advance of the RFP actually being signed.
Yeah, so is it a case of when the meeting happened there, was it a case of, you said we can't meet this compliance, it's impossible for us to do this, and that they were, like I said, open to this and went, okay, well, listen, we need to... And this sounds to me, you know, I mean, the share price is down and people are starting to think, oh, hang on, it's never going to happen. But it sounds to me like a very collaborative process you're going through. Because, like you said, Botswana has an energy problem deficit. They want to address this and hopefully with a cleaner solution than exists at the moment with the diesel. So is it a case of, okay, listen, we're going to have to, you know... It's administration, isn't it? It's a hiccup in administration, but it'll get sorted. Is that the case?
It effectively is. Look, we have given them an excellent submission, and their understanding of that as well. And I can't comment on what the other party submitted, but look, the government really do want to get a CBM industry in place. Now, the requirements of their tender, from a strict point of view, weren't complied with. I think they are accepting of our explanation as to why, and they are very amenable to mending their document so that successful tenders can be submitted. So, yes, it is effectively an administrative issue, and the RFP is still available for us to take.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Tony and yourself have worked in CBM in Australia. Can't they just get a document from them and say, right, what's the kind of document you have here? And take it from that. So it seems at the moment documentation isn't appropriate for what you're doing, because obviously it's the first time it's ever been done in that country, so it's not without its hiccups, I suppose. But
There's absolutely no issue from our point of view, other than, you know, it's now a timing issue of when they come back to us and, you know, the amendments that they make to the RFP document. But in the meantime, we'll continue with our key objectives of building reserves through further work in the field. Our half-year report is due out later this month. A reserves upgrade is still on the cards. The business as usual, really, from our point of view, and the key fundamentals are still the same. We still have money in the bank. We still have our environmental approval. We have a mining license. You know, the market is there.
But you know what? They wouldn't go through all this, giving you a mining license, environmental license, all this to say no, we can't do it. I mean, you know, obviously, like I said, they're keen to get CBM up and running. It's just like I said, things like this happen, don't they? You are trailblazing here. It's never happened in this country. Hiccups are going to happen. It always does happen when you are doing something like this. You know, we're brand new in a country. It's never done it before. It's going to happen. It's not going to be plain sailing, is it? You know.
Well, ideally, we would have just submitted and they would have accepted our tender and we'd have ploughed ahead. But yeah, as you say, look, things can never, don't always run as smooth as you'd like them to. But I think in a number of months' time, we may look at this and say, well, what was the issue?
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Colin, thanks for coming on at such short notice. I just did sort of ping you a message saying people on Twitter wanted you to come on the podcast and explain, so you've done that. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll speak again, and it'll be a bit more positive, a bit more clear as to what's happening, and people think, yeah, exactly, like you just said there, what was the issue there? And maybe people will see this as an opportunity. Colin, thanks for coming on. Speak soon, hopefully, fella.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Louis Coates here, CEO of Kibo Mining. That's K-I-B-O. Thanks for joining me, Louis.
Good morning, Justin. Nice to be talking again.
Yeah, you've had some significant news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, and there's people always joining the podcast, new investors looking to, you know, take their first positions in companies. So if you're talking to someone like that, Louis, now, who's never heard of you, how do you explain what Kibo is all about, please?
Well, Kibo is a regional energy developer. We are developing energy projects in the southern and eastern part of Africa. Our flagship project being the Mbeya Coal to Power project in Tanzania, 300 megawatt mine mouth power station that we're developing there. And then a recent acquisition, which we are in the process of closing in Botswana, where we will also be looking at developing a 300 megawatt coal-fired mine mouth power station.
Marvelous stuff. And so yesterday, an RNS, which said Kibo signs MOU with Tanesco on the Mbeya Coal to Power project. So explain the detail here, Louis, and why it's significant in this journey.
Well, I think it's very significant in the sense that we've been developing this project over the last couple of years, gone through all the technical development, have done all the feasibility work, done all the environmental work, have done all the applications that we have to do, received all the certification from an environmental point of view, brought on board all our strategic partners in the form of General Electric as our original equipment manufacturer, SEPCO 3 as our EPC contractor, and all our consultants, and brought together a proper team and a well-developed project. The next logical step would then be to get the offtake agreement, to get the power purchase agreement. Mm-hmm. We've been in negotiations with the Tanzanian government to do that over the last couple of months in particular, where we had very intense negotiations. Always had the support, always had the commitment from the government to support it. And the MOU that we announced yesterday is the final full endorsement and formal and official engagement towards implementation of the MCPP. What I mean with that, towards finalizing the PPAE, which is in an advanced process of negotiation already as a result of the MOU. And with yesterday, we have now the formal endorsement of the government and all Tanzanian stakeholders, and we can move forward towards concluding the PPA on an expedited manner.
Yeah, and so you reckon you could be, so you say that's next, and when will you get this power station up and running, when is production, and also, I suppose, you know, put it into the larger picture here, explain the potential of this power project, if you can, on, you know, for shareholders.
Well, I think it's first and foremost important to understand the context. Mm-hmm. Tanzania is a country with about 50 million people. Mm-hmm. It's got a total generating capacity of about 2,000 megawatts. If you compare that to a country of South Africa that's got about 68 megawatt with a similar population. So there's a tremendous need for energy. Mm. You also look at the five-year strategy, which was announced by the president towards end of last year, and you will see how desperately the country needs energy to fulfill their development program and the industrialization program that they've announced. So where we fit in is perfect. It is the absolute perfect catalyst and enabler for the national socio-economic development program on a national level as well as on a regional level. And coming back to your question about the timelines, hence the urgency in getting the project going. I know there was a lot of frustration over the last couple of months with things not moving as quickly as all of us wanted it. But it was really important for us. We used this time to put in place the correct cornerstones and building blocks for what is to come. If you think about what I've said just now, how important this project is on the national scale, on a regional scale, what importance it has towards enabling, starting the broader national development program, then it is really important that we do the first steps correctly. We are there now. We have it all in place. We've signed the MOU. And within that context, there's an agreement between us, the Ministry of Energy, as well as the NESCO, to do this on an expedited basis, and where we are working towards finalizing the PPA by 31st or by end of March.
Yeah, well, that's quite significant. End of March, you say, and in the RNS, yeah, and you hope to believe you can be in production within 36 months. That's you know, first electricity into the grid. And what are the sort of figures around this, Leo? I mean, if a shareholder's listening, as an investor, I always look at what's the potential uplift in the company here. What are the figures, you can sort of talk about here?
Well, it is very difficult to, at this point in time, make any forecasts or predictions in terms of exactly what the uplift is. But, you know, if you look at it from a point of view that this is a project with a capital investment requirement of between $650 and $700 million, mm-hmm. That gives you the size, it gives you the gravity and weight of the project. If you look at what it's going to do in Tanzania in terms of the general economy, how strategic it is, it gives you an indication on what the potential lift can be. But to put exact figures on that, I think would be very difficult at this point in time. And I would dare to say even a little bit irresponsible. But if you look at the context, if you look at the strategic importance, the size of the project, I think it's quite easy to deduct from that the tremendous uplift that we hope to see realizing over the next weeks and months.
Yeah. So essentially, as you know, we were sitting here now at Kibo being a sort of 22 million market cap company. The potential, what is multifold, I suppose. Is that right?
Well, exactly. That's what we expect. I mean, I'm on record, where I've said that we are frustrated with the share price at the moment and the current market capitalization. But as we work through this process of working towards the PPA and what comes after that, I'm very confident that we will see a very significant lift in terms of market cap and share price.
Yeah, and it's probably worth pointing out. I mean, you do think this is going to be scalable as well, up to a 1,000 megawatt is power station. Is that right?
That's indeed right. The only reason why we're not developing it as a 1,000 megawatt plant from the word go is because of the limitations that we have in terms of power evacuation. So the national utility, TANESCO, is not able to evacuate more than 300 megawatts right now. That's why we're developing it for 300 megawatt, with a second phase of 400 megawatts and a third phase of another 300 megawatt.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I mean, people can look at the bottom of the RNS, say you do have the integrated bankable feasibility study there, for the entire sort of project. And you're talking about, what, $7.5 to $8.5 billion over a 25-year mine life, which is quite compelling, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of revenue figures that we're looking at. Yeah. And that's just in terms of this project directly. But if you look at the difference that this will make in the region, in the community where we are building it, it is multiples of that in terms of the development stimulation, or the how it will stimulate development in general. And then the indirect effect is far, far bigger than the direct effect.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Well, Louis, listen, if someone's listening to this and like the sound of this and they're not following the Kibo mining story, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
I think the first reason would be the progress that we're making in Tanzania as a as a pioneer in terms of independent power producing projects at utility scale. The fact that we've been able to get full endorsement from the government so far in the second place. And I would like to add to this, we cannot underestimate the significance of this MOU. This is the first one of its kind that's ever been done in Tanzania, in the IPP space. So the significance of this MOU cannot be underestimated. And then thirdly is our broader expansion strategy that we have in terms of becoming a regional energy developer, with our second acquisition already approaching closure, as I've stated earlier in the interview.
Yeah, and I suppose you said this is very much, you know, the model that you can take forward elsewhere, like in Botswana as well. So it's very scalable. Louis, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dominic White, Chief Executive Officer of Energizer Investments. That's ENGI ticker. Dominic, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Justin. Good to speak.
Now, we haven't spoken for a while, and listen, we'll update on what you're doing. But before we do, for people not aware of Energizer, can you summarise what the business is about, please, Dominic?
Yeah, very quickly. Energizer is an AIM-listed investment company. Its purpose is to make strategic investments to generate capital for shareholders, and the sector it's more focused on is the property sector, both in property operating companies and in direct property investments and loans.
Marvellous. Well, give us a quick update of what you've been doing last 6 months, because I know you've sold a bit of property, you've tied up the balance sheet, and you've made an announcement recently. So take us through some of the announcements, if you could, last 6 months, Dominic.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been successfully tidying up the balance sheet, and by that I mean the historic portfolio has been some secured property lending, development finance on a couple of property projects in Wellingborough and in Surrey. So those have been closed and capital has been brought back to the company. We've also been reducing the costs of the business. So we're now in a position of having no long-term creditors. All banks are repaid, low op costs, and we've got cash on the balance sheet ready to invest. And in fact, we've just made an investment. We'll come to that in a minute. So it's good timing for us as an investment company. Markets, as people all know, are uncertain. Owners of assets are less confident, slightly less confident. So it's a good time to have just completed the tidying up of everything and to have cash to go.
Yeah, okay. Well, in fact, it's probably worth covering that recent loan you made last couple of days. Take us through that and the thoughts behind that.
So, yeah, we've made a loan investment. As I said, Energizer has a history of making successful secured property loans. We've done this because, firstly, it's an efficient use of capital. Having cash in the bank, and as you'll know, the banks aren't returning. You don't get much of an investment by having money sitting still. So putting it to work by acquiring a loan is a good use of capital. It's a small part of the portfolio, and it's short term. It's only a 9-month transaction. So we put it to work for 9 months. Why we invest the other money? It's about 25% of the portfolio. It's very low risk. So it's on a property secured at 30% loan to value. So to put that in perspective, the market would have to fall by 70% the property values before anything gets affected in terms of our loan. And it's a 7.5% paid loan with a 4x interest cover. What that means is that the rent that goes into that building more than covers 4x the interest that gets paid to us as the investor. So it's a very secure investment. It's an efficient use of our money. It's also diversifying. So as we go on and make equity investments in things, which we'll come to, this is a diversifying type of transaction into a loan.
Yeah, well, before we go into the strategy, is this part of this kind of loan, short-term loans, is this part of the broader strategy?
It's part of the broader strategy, yeah. I mean, historically, we've been talking a lot in the last year about more specifically about operating companies.
Yeah.
And we talked about micro storage. We'll come to an update on that in a second. So operating companies... What's happening in that area is there's been significant increases in valuations in operating companies the last 12 months. You'll have seen that in the press, private equity companies talking about how difficult it is to buy because of the higher valuation multipliers. We've seen that as well. We've progressed 4 transactions in self-storage and service departments, got to detailed pricing, but haven't proceeded because the pricing has just got so high that we don't think there's enough further upside for us to give those returns that we wanted to investors. And also minority protection. So often you go in as a minority shareholder as an investment company in some of these situations, and you need to have those protections in place such that if something does go wrong, and we have a lot of uncertainty out there at the moment, you can step in and sort out the problem. So we're only going to pull the trigger on these on operating companies when we're sure about the pricing, and when we're really comfortable with the minority protections. As Luke Johnson, interestingly, was writing about at the weekend, case in point for him on some things he's done, it doesn't take that long to make an investment, but if you don't get it right, it can take you years to unwind it. So we are very being really careful about what we invest in, the pricing and the minority protections we get. Hence, operating companies still our focus, but we have a broader strategy. You were just mentioning. We have a broader strategy. All of it's related to property, the whole strategy, operating companies, and this broader part. And part of the broader strategy is where appropriate, where it's good use of capital, and where it's short term, we would look at making acquisitions of loans to property. But we've done that bit for now because it's about 20%, 25% of the portfolio. It's short term. We will make other investments using the cash into equity situations, and then within 9 months that money will be repaid to us, we'll have made the return, and then we'll put it to work into something else.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well let's go into the micro self storage. You made an investment in that. Well, how's that coming along? Is that still part of the plan?
Yeah, that's still part of the plan. We committed in July, the RNS was, June, July last year, £0.6 million, £600,000 to micro storage with Paul Fahey, operating partner. Again, there, it's about pricing. We looked at lots of sites, or they've been looking at lots of sites, and the pricing within the M25, which is where the focus is for that business, is particularly tight. It's grown a lot. It's got high over the last 6 to 12 months. So with something like self-storage businesses, you need to get in at the right price. If you pay the wrong price day one and you're forever paying a rent, which is too difficult for the business, it's hard to make it profitable, and then it becomes hard to scale. So there's a lot of focus on getting that pricing right day one, also in the micro storage business. So what we've done is we've widened the geographic strategy of that business to be able to look in regional cities, south, southeast, and Midlands, for sites to be able to start that business. So it's still there. It's not the important thing is the opportunity is there. We're making sure we get the pricing right, so there's enough upside in it for us. But we're being careful not to overpay on the way in.
Yeah, well, it's like investing in shares. You've always got to look at the price, you know, because the old adage "buy low, sell high" still works. You know, and it's amazing how many people forget about that. They say,
"Well, yeah,
you can buy a good company at an expensive price." You know, and it just doesn't give you any upside at all. You know,
yeah, exactly. See, people often say, "Oh, so you make a lot most of your money on the way in," and that's also true as well. If you overpay on the way in, you can, and with markets like this, I mean, when things going up 10% a year, 50% a year, then you can recover. But now we're at a point where there's a bit of volatility there, there's uncertainty there. You have house prices which are growing against London, but they're flat in London. You won't, if you make a mistake on the way in, the markets may not save you. So you have to be particularly careful right now.
Yeah, and for the investor, people who invested in you, I mean, these kind of things you're looking into, when do you see them coming to fruition, or you're announcing something on them? I mean, is it the next 3-6 months or what?
Definitely the next three. We've got, we're looking at two or three opportunities a week. We've got negotiations going on two direct property situations. So within the next 3 months, we expect to be making the next announcement, definitely.
Marvellous. Well, Dominic, if someone's listening to this, and I'm looking at your market cap, and it doesn't take a lot to move a company share price when your market cap is 1.5 million. So if someone's listening and like the sound of this, but they're not following the story, give them three reasons why they should add you to their watch list by hitting that follow button on your page, please.
Sure. Well, we're, as I said at the start, we're an AIM company, but we're in a unique position, I think, for an AIM investment company. No creditors, low cost, and we've got cash in the bank ready to invest. Obviously, we've allocated a little bit of that for 9 months to a loan transaction, but that's great diversification, and it's great for income into the business. We are And we also have several property-related investments we're looking at every single week, and we will be committing to one of those in the next 3 months when we get the pricing right. We want the pricing to be great. We want to make sure the upside is strong, and we want to make sure we have the right controls in place to manage the downside, given where the markets are at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Dominic, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Tlou Energy. Just spoke to Colm, T-L-O-U. At four, Sure Ventures, S-U-R-E. Definitely one for your watch list. Spoke to Barry yesterday, and they're investing in tech. They're a venture capital fund, basically. It's focusing on tech, from Internet of Things to blockchain to all that kind of stuff. So it's worth looking at. At three, Galliford Try. Well, bigger company. GFRD. At two, Frontera Resources, FRR. And number one most followed company in the last 24 hours was 88 Energy. By the way, you can see the most followed companies for the week and for the month if you click the link, or just go to the blog, so you'll see it there. voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Vast Resources, result of meeting. At four, The People's Operator, trading statement. At three, Greatland Gold, GGP, forward modelling and drilling programme at Haveron. At two, Main Energy, operations update. And number one, most liked RNS, even though the share price has fallen, is from Tlou Energy, and that's the 100 megawatt request for tender brief or debrief meeting. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.